This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is Martin Spriggs, and you've joined episode 468 for Tuesday, October 20. Well, maybe I should just say Monday, October 24th. We're out of cycle, and I'm out of step. So that would be Monday, October 24th, 2016. Joining me as usual, who I should have turned over the reins to actually introduce the show. Sally Draper, because she knows what day this is. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. And I have someone new joining me. It's my new monkey. I don't know if y'all can see it in the background, but in case you didn't notice, I have a monkey in the background. I worked at the Treasure House Resale Shop, which is our local Wells Resale Shop supporting Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. And I brought home a grinning monkey because I love big monkey grins. So just needed it in the Wells Tech set.
He looks ceramic. Is he a cookie jar?
I think he is, but he was missing his lid, and he needed a home, and he called out to me.
And is he holding a banana?
He is. Okay. He's very happy.
New mascot, yeah. We used to have
a very loud dog, yes.
Many years ago.
Yeah, he used to come around jiggling his collar and disrupting the show occasionally.
Giving us joy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of joy, giving us joy and mascots, Jason Schmidt is back and joining us. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon. You got an interesting background behind you, too.
Yeah, you know what? We're kind of working on an extended office remodel that's been going on here for, it's been at least 6 months, it seems like. So I don't want to put things away too much and have to get them back out again. But then, you know how it is. Just got other stuff going on. And, well, you know, hopefully it doesn't offend too many people.
You're done, yeah.
That's
it
right.
It just looks like you're really busy there in the Bennington ISD, where you're a technology coordinator.
Yeah, I have a new title now this year. I'm the director of technology for the district. So
awesome.
I get a few additional responsibilities on top of the stuff that I was already doing. So it's a good thing, though. I'm excited about the role.
Excellent.
So speaking of little things we've got on our set, what do you have around your neck there? What are the little pins you've got there?
Oh, yeah. So last year, you guys remember we did, I talked about our robotics and the competition that our high school did. So we did the first Stronghold. It was kind of a medieval theme for that, and they gave pins to everybody who participated in that. And then there's a first robotics pin on there. And then Google, before they changed the name of the program, I was a certified trainer, and they gave me a pin. Oh, yep, Sally's got hers too. So yay. I just put it on my name tag, and then I got to show my swag off to everybody.
Very
makes
fun.
Makes them think I'm more important than I am.
Oh, you're important to us. You are our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, which means that we're going to talk about educational technology today. And one thing that we've kind of gotten in the habit of doing each year is taking a little bit of a focus on a report that comes out that kind of helps us track some trends and kind of look into the future a little bit. It's called the Horizon Report for 2016, K-12 Horizon Report. What exactly is in that report from year to year?
Well, you know, this is the New Media Consortium is who puts this out, and it's basically a pulse of education technology throughout the country. And they basically, the report gets split up into a couple of different sections. They focus on things like emerging trends and things that look at long-term, mid-term, and short-term. So anything within, you know, if it's a long-term trend, it's going to be 5 years or more. And then, you know, if you're talking midterm, that's more like the next 3 to 5 years. And then if it's short-term, these are things that you should be seeing, you're probably seeing right now and will be seeing for the next couple of years. And then they also take a look at some of the particular things that are going on in education. So, you know, for example, things that are ready to be adopted, things like makerspaces and online learning are in there for this report. But then you also have, once again, more of those mid-range things. So talking about robotics and virtual reality and artificial intelligence and wearables and all of these other kinds of things. And then kind of use this as a tool or a platform to kind of help guide some decision making for teachers and for administrators and people who need to be looking at these kinds of things, and what kinds of decisions do we need to make now based on what's going to be coming, kind of trying to kind of peek around the bend a little bit and see what kind of a curveball technology is going to throw at us.
And I'll just make mention that this year, for the first time, they partnered with another organization, the COSN, which I'm not even sure what the acronym stands for. I know, Consortium for School Networking, COSN. And they've actually put together a digital toolkit to help you with those conversations. So it's how to get together the decision makers in your school or in your district or whatever it may be to review the report and where you might start and how you might structure those meetings and things. So this companion digital toolkit is brand new with this year's NMC report.
Obviously, we cannot. It's a long report and it covers many, many topics. So the encouragement would be for our educators, especially those responsible for technology in our schools, to take a look at this. There's valuable information, great research in here. So we don't obviously have time to run through all of that, but we wanted to kind of focus in on maybe something of interest, and that is, I think, coding as a literacy. There's an article on page 16 that we wanted to spend a little bit of time on.
Yeah, and I think the reason, and Sally, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the reasons that we picked this one is, A, it's a short-term trend, so it's something that you should have been hearing something about for the past couple of years for sure, and then also kind of probably are already making some plans to implement something like this in the next year or two. And this has been a really hot-button issue just here in my district and the work that I've been doing, and then also with colleagues that I have in the area. Just how do we incorporate more of this coding into the curriculum? And, you know, the fact that coding is coming out as, you know, you have more and more schools and more districts and even whole countries are making this a part of their educational standards, is something that students have to study as a part of their course of study within a school, is just a really, you know, to me, a really beneficial, really a great trend to be seeing. And it's good that it's being acknowledged as something that's, you know, part of this Horizon report that's a very influential publication.
Jason, where does this fall? In which discipline? Now, naturally, I mean, to me, it seems like it might fall in the mathematics area. But is this kind of on its own? I mean, it crosses over into logic and science and physics even. I mean, there's a lot of different ways it can go. Where has it landed maybe in your school district?
Well, we're still kind of having those conversations, Martin. So we're not completely sure where it fits. You know, the really neat thing about coding, just in general, you know, if you treat it as a literacy thing, then it becomes an entirely different thing altogether. You know, it's not necessarily, well, you know, we do coding in math, so it's a math process. Right. There's definitely a lot of mathematical concepts that are involved with it. You know, you have algorithms, you have processes, you have functions, all of that kind of stuff. It really fits in with that. But you could also look at it as we're learning a foreign language. So, you know, this is how computers talk. How can I give computers instructions to make them do the things that I want them to do? And then if you start looking at it like that, well, then it's more of a, then it can be more of an integrative kind of an approach where, you know, you're getting multiple modes and you're getting multiple different ways that this can be incorporated. And how do you kind of go through and check all of that stuff off and make sure that that's helping you meet your goals that you want to meet from a curriculum perspective?
I suppose a natural part of the conversations you're having is, well, what do you give up? I mean, there's always a give and take, and the curriculum's usually, you know, overstuffed And the teachers, the faculty, the administration are probably wondering, well, if we put this in, what do we take out? So is it replacing something? You know, how are you guys dealing with that?
The biggest conversations that we're having are actually developing into things that are bigger than just computer science and coding. This for us now is kind of forcing some of those discussions about project-based learning and, you know, really getting into, because you're right, you know, we can't add a coding class. There just aren't enough hours in the day without extending the school day, which is going to, that opens a whole different set of issues that we're not going to get into. But when you're talking about coding and you're doing it as an integrated part of a broader project, a multidisciplinary project, not only are you kind of hitting those different curricular standards that you're looking at, you know, those different content standards, your math, your science, social studies, whatever, but you're also just doing a better job of teaching. You know, the kids learn things better when there's more relevance to the content that they're looking at and the things that they're doing in those different projects that they have going on. So it's been really interesting to see kind of how people stand and what they think about this kind of an approach. It's definitely challenging, and it's definitely, you know, it's different from the way that we were taught. And, you know, it's just a good conversation to have.
Interesting. You know, the New Media Consortium reports are generally structured with just a really short two-page introduction almost into different topics. And that's what you'll find if you look up this coding as a literacy topic. It gives you a lot of food for thought. It gives you real life examples. It gives you things like Jason's describing in his own district, how other districts are coping with these challenges and things like that, so that you can start the conversation and see where it goes in your setting. One of the themes that I found kind of running all throughout everything I read from this section of the report was the underrepresentation of girls in coding. And I think one thing it talked about was make sure you get them at the middle school level for sure, because by the time they get to high school, they've moved on from thinking they're even capable of doing coding and things like that. And one of the funnest examples I read was someone working with a cheerleading group on loops and having them develop symbols to represent a clap or a stomp or a jump or whatever it may be, and seeing that they can turn their cheers into a program, basically, into something that can be written in that format and stuff. And so I think a lot of creativity needs to go into it. And like you said, a lot of kind of development in all different areas, not just focused in one area.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sally, and I think that's getting a lot more attention these days. I even read an article, I think it was early or late last week, where that number, where you'd think we'd be getting more and more girls into programs, is actually going the other direction for a number of different reasons. And maybe that's because of, you know, some of the bad press that's going on in the marketplace and glass ceilings, and girls aren't thinking that that's a good career path or whatever. So yeah, I think that's definitely a focus. One thing that I found interesting in some of the articles that were listed in some of the resources that were associated was how there is a natural objection from faculty members who don't think they're capable of dealing with this, don't think they're capable of teaching this because they don't know anything about coding. They didn't grow up with it. They never had that when they went to school. You know, it's not like, well, I can pick up algebra or whatever. This is a whole new thing. And with some of the resources that are out there, especially when you're dealing with middle school or elementary school, it's not that hard. You know, it's pretty easy to get yourself to a place where you can easily teach it and again move kids up the chain. And then once they obviously get into, you know, high school, then you have people who have the experience in some of those disciplines. So that objection is overcome by some of the great resources online and some of the things in the report and maybe some of the things that we're going to mention here in our conversation as well.
Well, and I think one of the implications that we have, if, you know, particularly with Wells schools, is, you know, it could, if you wanted to do like a direct instruction model or something like that, that definitely takes a lot of time investment on the part of the teacher in order to be able to do that. But at the same time, you have there are just scads of resources out there for different online tools that just take kids through step by step, and everything is paced out for them.
Self-taught, right?
Yeah, exactly. And all you really need to do at that point is just provide opportunity and motivation to get the kids in there, and they can honestly pick a lot of this stuff up on their own and, you know, with all the resources that are out there.
So what type of resources do you use in your district, like that early elementary to middle elementary age group? What do you guys do?
Vast majority of our teachers, when they do coding, they're participating in the Hour of Code, and they're using code.org. We're working on different kinds of initiatives to get more and more of that coding out into the classroom. So I have this spring, I'll be doing a robotics program with Finch Robots in all of our fifth and sixth graders across three different buildings. So I'll have, you know, 400 kids, 500 kids that will be exposed to coding in a robotics kind of a setting at that point as a special project that's been incorporated into their science classes. So, so we can still meet the curriculum objectives, but include those kinds of things. And then beyond that, we don't have any formal programs or instruction or anything like that. And that's why it's something that we really need to take a look at and are evaluating and analyzing to see how we can make this work to be something that's more of a requirement or more of something that we can include to kids that, not necessarily by request, but we can make it more available, I guess is what I'm, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying mm-hmm. to say.
I was just out at, at MVL, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School last week for a career day. And my topic was technology. I'm going to talk to you about a career in technology. And I had probably at least half the kids sit down and say, well, I'm not going to have a career in technology, but you have candy, so I'll sit and talk to you or whatever, you know, and they were just like, I'm just not sure about this. And so I tried to stress to them that, you know, you don't have to be a programmer to get some benefit out of understanding computational thinking and the way programs work. And more than likely, no matter what their career is, no matter what, you're going to be dealing with computers and your careers in the future and understanding them as a bonus. But I did get a lot of pushback from the kids that I'm not that smart in technology or whatever.
Should have told them often there is candy associated with coding.
Yes. True. So I wanted to mention just a couple of others. Scratch and Scratch Junior are definitely great ways to, or probably the other way around, Scratch Junior for the early elementary, moving up to Scratch, great ways to get kids started in coding. And then one of my favorites, I actually have it up here on my screen, is something called CS Unplugged. And this is actually an open source effort, a really nice set of resources that you can use to teach computational thinking without computers. So lots of really neat examples where kids can kind of act out binary or loops or whatever it may be, just using different resources that are described in the book. So check it out. It's a free download and it has a lot of really neat resources.
Yeah, there's a ton of resources, and we won't have time to go through them all. I just wanted to ask you, Jason, how is ISTE, the ISTE standards dealing with this? Are they represented, or is it kind of integrated now? I would think they would be kind of a thought leader when it comes to trying to push this into our curriculums.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, ISTE published standards for computer science educators in 2011, I believe. So if you go to the ISTE website, you can search for ISTE standards for computer science educators, and that will take you to the different resources. Now that's maybe a little bit more than what most people would be looking for.
Right.
Because those are for the educators who are teaching those kinds of things. If you look at the revised student standards for ISTE, and they just released those this summer, that could be another show topic for you guys, by the way. Or that's another thing that's out there. But they just released the 2016 standards over the summer. And, they kind of restructured and reframed it to say that students are going to be empowered learners, digital citizens, knowledge constructors, innovative designers, computational thinkers, creative communicators, and global collaborators. So the computer science part of that would be driven by that computational thinker part, where they're thinking through problems logically and really solving problems and sticking with it, that's really where all of those things come in. So that's where the ISTE standards would be driving those kinds of things.
Okay, great. We probably can't spend a lot more time, but just an encouragement that the Horizon Report is out there. We'll have a link in the show notes. All kinds of other resources associated with that. Every article brings up kind of a different dimension of computer literacy. It's not just all about coding. There's obviously logical thinking and all the things that we haven't really even touched on that are related to computer science. I view this as kind of today's, modern day logic. I went through kind of a very dry course in college on logic and even in high school. And this would have been just heaven, for me back then, where you're actually, you have the ability to make stuff, create stuff, and it's not just kind of this philosophical, ethereal, exercise. This is creativity. So it exercises both sides of the brain, and I think that's the appeal of it, where it helps kids kind of find their way and develop both sides of the brain and consider, if not a life or a career in this space, an understanding of it and the world that they're going to live in and have to function in some way, shape, or form. And we're seeing that, I think, in the enterprise and I think in business too, where a lot of the tools that are coming out of companies like Microsoft and whatever are kind of empowering users, the knowledge workers, to build their own little programs to get work done. And I think this is obviously a good step in that direction. So check out those resources. Let's move along to the next segment of the show, which is news in tech. And interestingly enough, it kind of touches on what we've been talking about here.
A couple of things to mention in this section. First of all, Google is having their annual Education on Air online conference. And this is a free conference. You can head over to educationonair.withgoogle.com to register for free and participate. The date they've set aside for this is Saturday, December 3rd, or that's when the time frame rolls around for the Americas. It's a worldwide conference, so it's covering a lot of different time zones, but they're going to have keynotes from 11 to 12:30 on Saturday the 3rd, and then breakout sessions from 12:30 to 6 p.m., all of those Central Standard Time. And they don't have a lot of details of who's going to be there this year, but I can tell you that they did this last year, and they had some really amazing presentations. So if you're interested at all, then you should head over and complete their free registration for Google Education on Air one-day conference.
Why not? Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Jason mentioned earlier that Hour of Code is a very popular way to encourage and engage students in coding. It's an effort that is put on during a certain week of the year where they encourage people to spend at least an hour coding in the classroom. And Hour of Code dates have been announced for this year. It will be December 5th through 11th. So just following that Education on Air conference, the week of the 5th through the 11th. And again, free to register, and then your kids and participants can be accounted in the Hour of Code efforts. And they have posters and all kinds of cool resources to help you with that Hour of Code. So besides having coding lessons online, Hour of Code also sponsors this big media blast and effort around promoting the Hour of Code from December 5th through 11th. So be sure to participate.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, now is the next segment, and just want to remind everybody that this is the last week for the Interactive Faith Series. Well, actually two things. The last week for the Interactive Faith Series, which is on the Catechism. What does this mean? Presented by Pastor John Brown. And if you just go to wells.net/interactivefaith, you can get hooked up with that. That's on Wednesday evenings, and this is the last Wednesday. It's at 6 and 8. However, each one of them were recorded so that you could rerun the lecture. And it's kind of built in with discussion guides and time out for discussion and whatever. So you could actually use the video in your own setting, either personally or in a group, and participate that way. So these are available, or any previous Interactive Faith series. And there have been ones on Romans and sharing your faith and all kinds of different resources are out there. But if you go to wells.net/interactivefaith, you can find those series, or tune in on Wednesday night for the last one in the Catechism series. And a final shout out for Gospel Outreach with Media, GOWM.org, I believe, or check the show notes for that exact URL. And it is simply a series of maybe a dozen kind of self-guided presentations and discussions around them. I have one of them out there called Digital Christianship. Discussion has been great. It's targeted mainly at high school and college age students, but anybody can go out and join the discussion. We're going to run it for another week, so I believe the end of next weekend is the last week of it. So take advantage of that. All kinds of different topics related to sharing your faith through digital means and digital media. So that's Gospel Outreach with Media from the Christ in Media Institute, and Tom Custer, who is the director there, is doing a great job at running that conference. So thank you, John, for that, or Tom, for that. Let's go to our picks of the week. Jason, pick of the week.
All right. Hey, I'm gonna take advantage of my my guest rights, I guess, and I'm gonna pull two things out here. So the first thing, you guys see that? Okay. Oh, hello. Just totally shrank up.
Good.
And now I changed it. All right. So the first thing is something for everybody to use. It's a website called commonlit.org. What this is an absolutely free resource, will always be a free resource. It's run by a nonprofit. I met these guys at ISTE last summer, and it's just fantastic. It's a great resource for doing things like text-dependent analysis and critical reading and critical thinking as it concerns text. So we have you have hundreds of fiction, nonfiction, and it's geared for fifth grade on up, obviously. But if you look at the library, you can just browse this without creating an account. But you can go by Lexile range. You can pick out different themes that are in there. So if you're looking for something within your curriculum that's tied to something that you have going on, this is a really great way to find some of those resources that will help you. So, you know, for example, you're talking about fables in a literacy class. You have an entire fables section that you can pull up. There are 15 different texts. But then the other really cool thing about this is if we open up one of these texts, you have paired texts that go along with it. So you can see some additional, you know, essays or related reading that can go with that. And then you also have, if you sign in, you can get videos and multimedia and things like that. You get a teacher guide. And then there's also a parent guide that's involved, so you can get the home connection with that. And then you also have some additional accessibility things in here. So if I highlight some text, I can click on this play button right here, and it's probably not going to come through. But you can hear I'm going to stop that. So it's highlighting that and reading that text out loud to me as it's going through. Once again, 100% free. Create an account as a teacher. Add your kids. You can assign things to them. And then there will be questions and quizzes that you can have them do as they go through. So great instructional tool and totally fit a need that we were looking for in our district, and something that we have started using. So commonlit.org is the website that you need to go to in order to sign up for that. And then my second thing that I didn't get a chance to share before, the sun's always shining out here in Omaha, and we'd love for people to come and visit. And now I'm trying to give all y'all an excuse to come and visit. So if you don't have anything going on April 20th and 21st, and actually it starts on April 19th, I'm on the board of directors for the Nebraska Education Technology Association, and we have a huge conference that we put on there in the spring. It's only 4 hours from New Ulm, Sally. So it's a nice quick little road trip to come in and attend our conference. Registration doesn't open up until January, I don't think. But if you mark your calendars for it, it's going to be a great opportunity to do some learning and to find out about places, things like Common Lit or other things that are going on in the world of ed tech. Great place to learn about that kind of stuff. So open invitation to anybody who wants to come down to Omaha.
Spring. Anybody exciting going to be at your conference, Jason?
Yeah, one of our super, it hasn't been officially announced, but we have papers in hand. Hadi Partovi, the director for code.org, is going to be one of our keynote speakers. So awesome. It'll be a great opportunity to come and hear him speak. And we have a different keynote on Friday. So, that's going to be a nationally recognized speaker too. Great place to come and learn. Like I said, awesome conference. If you can't make it to ISTE, this is a good runner up.
Awesome. Very good. Thanks for sharing.
Sally, you're up.
I'm going to jump in there with my latest find on our topic of the day. And so I claimed it as my pick of the week since I came across an article just published last Wednesday. It's titled "A Plan to Teach Every Child Computer Science." So again, following up on that concept of coding across the curriculum, a really interesting article. And what's most exciting about it is that several different entities came together and have actually produced a K-12 computer science framework. Now, they're not calling it standards. They're calling it a framework that you can take and then develop into your individual standards in your setting. But they have vision. They have different statements around the framework. They have guidance for implementing the framework, and a lot of downloadable resources and things that you can use. The number one downloadable resource is the actual document, the computer science framework. It's not short. It's 307 pages long, but you're going to find all of these different entities. Like I said, it's not just educators, but it's the computer science community who's hurting for computer science literate graduates from our schools and who wants to get behind this initiative for that reason. And they've come up with a vision for K-12 computer science. Like I said, the practices and concepts, the framework that they're suggesting schools can use as they look at computer science or coding across the curriculum. So brand new, hot off the press, and something that could be a real benefit to you as you're considering these topics that we've been discussing on today's show.
Very nice. Thank you, Sally. Mm-hmm. My pick is a website, and actually a little bit more than a website. It is a program called Code Club, codeclubworld.org, and we've got a couple of examples there. But basically the concept is simple. This was two ladies that got together back, I believe, in 2012, who said, we'd like to increase coding literacy amongst kids 9 to 11. So it's a very narrow focus, which I think gives this some simplicity and very easy thing to kind of get your arms around and take advantage of. Basically, it is a series of resources that allow a volunteer, so it's really just kind of a simple formula. They need a volunteer, They need the projects, which they provide, coding projects that they provide in three different areas. So there's a kind of a three-step course, and it's and they basically want you to teach an hour a week or an hour sessions. And the sessions include, the first group of sessions include using Scratch, which Sally mentioned before. The second group of sessions include teaching kids HTML and CSS, so building websites. And then the last coding session is on Python, which is a programming language, gets a little bit deeper. You can do some more complicated programming logic. So you need a volunteer, you need the project resources, which they give you for free. You need a venue, so a place to invite the kids to. And the reason that I picked this is I thought that this would be a super easy way to take advantage of some of the computer labs that exist, or you know, the Chromebook carts or whatever that we have in a lot of our schools. And then of course you need the kids. They give all kinds of resources here for you to get involved. It's a really easy step-by-step process. They want you to register the course itself because they get funding, government funding for the number of people that that work. It's in different languages. So if you are maybe in a cross-cultural area and maybe you have Spanish speakers, there are Spanish resources. They have all kinds of different resources and in different languages. You can see that we have, I don't know how many here, a bunch of them. It's been translated in, you know, maybe 20, 25 languages here. You pick the language. You get the resources. There are PDFs. There are start, kind of beginning files and finished files, so you can see it. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying before, that even in the more advanced stuff, in the Python stuff, you really don't need to be an expert. You just have to kind of understand what's going on within the lesson itself. And when you jump in there, you just download the project materials. There's a PDF. There's images. There's text files. There's basically everything that you need to get this code club set up. And the reason that I picked this is I think there's some maybe chances that this could be used in a kind of a VBS-like setting, and maybe even the lessons modified to bring in, you know, some gospel. So it's not just all about you know, the lessons that they've prepackaged, but with a little bit of tweaking, I looked at a few of them, it would not be hard to make a Bible lesson out of some of the things, especially the web-based ones and the resources there. So you have an opportunity not just to teach coding, but kind of in VBS style, you're mm-hmm. not just having fun and they're being creative, but they're being creative with resources that have some gospel in them. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for people that maybe have a technical bent and are apt to teach and are good with 9 to 11-year-olds, and you have the venue. Many of our churches and schools have a built-in venue, just a community outreach opportunity using a free resource like this called Code Club. So that is my pick of the week.
Good idea.
Martin, you just changed my life. This is fantastic.
It is. Yeah. I thought it was so well done, and it's not hard to do.
No.
You just hand it off. You just need a good volunteer and a program, and away you go. So
I really just need to dig into this, because if this is all stuff that can be done on Chromebooks, then that's – oh, this is fantastic. Like I said, you just changed my life. Well, there's so many different applications for this. This is fantastic. Posted.
Yeah, I kind of like the way they did it, and I'm glad I ran across it. So I wish I had more time where I could do this myself. But all right, let's move on to ministry resources.
And I'll do a quick screen share to remind our listeners of freebibleimages.org. We talked about this off and on, I think, since Wells Tech has been in existence. They've been building up a whole collection of free imagery related to Bible stories. And they have images, photographic type images. They have maps. They have illustrative images. And just recently, they've been pointing people to all the images around the Christmas story. And so as you're preparing to teach, during the Advent and Christmas season, this might be one of the resources you can look at. Again, all the different images in photographic format, but also in some really kid-friendly graphic drawings. So examples I have up here, this is the story of Mary being visited by the angel, and then Mary visiting Elizabeth. And both the illustrations that I show are kind of line drawings. They look kind of like some of the Christ-like drawings and things, but then they also have some that are more geared towards preschoolers, just really fun, almost cartoon-like graphics. One where Zechariah loses his voice and until John the Baptist is born, and another of Mary being visited by the angel and her visiting Elizabeth, the angel visiting Joseph, and that kind of thing. So these just may be things that you want to bookmark and come back to as you're preparing to teach the Advent and Christmas stories.
Very nice. Thank you, Sally. And the last segment of the show is, of course, our featured video.
And our featured video this week is from the musical group Koine. They have a beautiful rendition of A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, given it's time Reformation for the Reformation. You might want to include this on your website or share it via Facebook, put it on social media. Really great way to reach out with the story of the Reformation. And this is Reformation 499, so a good reason to celebrate this year and to usher in the year of the 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation, the nailing of the 95 Theses to the church door in Wittenberg. So
very nice.
Enjoy the holiday.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to be at it again, Sally, and we're going to be talking about internet addictions. And we're privileged to be able to interview Dan Scheffel, staff minister out in Onalaska, Wisconsin. And he is behind, or one of the men behind Conquerors Through Christ, those who are fighting pornographic addictions, certainly one of the biggest internet addictions of all. So you will want to tune in next week for a very, very revealing interview that Dan provided to us, and talking a little bit more about the very useful Conquerors Through Christ website. So tune in next week for that. Jason? You brought your A game once again. Thank you so much for joining us, and so glad that we're hit the school year again and that you're able to spend an hour with us every other month.
No, I'm happy to be a part of it. I'll be here as long as you guys will have me.
All right.
Awesome.
Sally, thank you for all your work with the show notes and bringing it as well almost each and every Tuesday. Today you brought it on Monday. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.